Good evening, everyone. We're starting again on Wednesday night.
Yes.
It's just after 7 o'clock, and we're working our way through the American Book of the Dead.
Yes.
By E.J. Gold. And we've been in a technical morass for the last 12 minutes or so, and we've emerged into this chamber.
The American Book of the Dead night. Wednesday, this night.
Chamber, particularly.
Chamber, that one.
Yeah.
That's where we are.
So we won't remember, we won't forget our friend Susan either.
No.
And this, I believe it's this weekend that she, there's the memorial service.
Yes.
And so she, the memorial service was planned by her, written out by her. She did all of the work with the mortuary and with, she wanted a particular chaplain from the hospital. There's a whole set of people at these hospitals, which are always, virtually all of them are volunteer jobs. They're the spiritual guide mm-hmm. people. That's what they call them. And they're all volunteers. Here at our little teeny hospital, there are 40. Volunteers, which I would like to actually, I may, tomorrow morning I'm going to talk to somebody who works with them, and I might just talk with them, give them a little talk. But the point is that this particular chaplain was very Christian-based, and Susan was very nervous about it being the word Jesus being mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But because she clearly was not rooted in that outward religious practice. She was in another form of practice. But she knew the people surrounding her, her care, immediate caregivers, needed the help of doing these specific things.
Mm.
Very interesting point, if you think about it. This is a person that was convinced that she was a voyager. So she knew that on a certain day, she didn't know the day, but she knew it was before Christmas, and it was before Christmas,
mm-hmm.
she would pass away. So she was designing the transit space for the last year, actually. When we first started talking about it, I said, what music do you want there? And she used the EJ's epitaph. There you go. Thank you. And we talked about the scent to have and candles. What did she want the mood to be? And she selected all the pictures that were supposed to go there. Now here's something that's an interesting thing that's going to happen. And Harry, you might. She wrote letters to a lot of everybody. Not everybody, because she didn't know all 7 billion of the people on the planet, but she knew a few. And she wrote these letters out. And Dave's instruction to Dave, her husband, was to mail them out. He hasn't done that yet. I spoke to him a couple of days ago. And but he'll probably mail them out next week. So... isn't that
I have received a letter from her.
Did you get it? Oh, so you did.
This was about 2 or 3 months ago. I'm not sure. This
no,
is the same thing
it's not
talking
ones
about.
I'm about. Yeah, I got some too when before she passed, but I think it's possible that she's done another communication to us that was designed to be mailed later by others. So we'll see about that. So just know that she's in this space too in a certain way.
Definitely.
Her reading cycle is over now for a month, not a month, but 2 or 3 weeks, I guess. Nortiana, Penny,
Yes.
some others. So anyway, there you have it. So get a copy of the book, of the American Book of the Dead guidebook, You have to either order it online, you go to Gateways Books and Tape, and if you see the emails I send out, you can click on Gateways Books and Tape and go order the darn thing.
Yeah.
Because if you have it, then you'll be an integral part of the discussion, and you'll be an integral part of the fabric that we will weave together. Each moment we have the opportunity to put a stitch in time, in a sense, and each time that we have that chance, we should take it. Because this fabric is being rewoven now by us, and we as them, that they all talk about. This is not the short story.
This is the short story us.
Us. This is the short story us. And oddly enough, no individual is present here. You kind of think that, don't you? Like Dan might think that he's a little bit different than me. Or
perhaps.
Maybe he does, but in fact, the case is that we are all part of that which creates the next cycle of that invocation. And what do you got over there? Oh, good. Laura's on. 34. I use her nickname is 34. I just say 34. And so 34 is on. Let's just say she's got some time in grade with that particular book, too.
Wonderful.
So now is that time. All right? So anyway, how you doing, Pat?
Better now.
Yeah.
Definitely better now. Hooked up LinkedIn and live, so to say. And another little piece of this would be our other component that is here with us this evening, but not visible, is Ivan, who, if you have been contributing today for his health and healing and well-being. He had the successful completion of cataract surgery and has let us know he's doing well. So he's with us but not presently sitting in a chair right here. So that's a member of the team that's
an integral part.
Participating in a different modality this evening.
Welcome to Ivan. I can see him perfectly well.
Thank you.
We'll pass that on to him, George.
I'm sure he can see me perfectly well, too, now with his cataract surgery.
That's correct.
Having had it, it works beautifully.
Well, that's good to hear.
That's good.
That's good to hear.
That'll be good for Ivan.
So where we are in the American Book of the Dead is we've made it to Chamber 41.
Yes.
41. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I do believe it.
And
absolutely.
It's kind of a, I don't know how to characterize it exactly, this chamber, but it's almost a little bit like maybe a drill sergeant would issue to you, you know, says, no, you can't go on family leave today. You're in a different boat, buddy. What does it tell us then, Pat? How does it start us off?
It starts with the words, my power. And that's not a word that was used any other place in any of the other chambers, my power. And the next part, we've been coming across more recently, more often, to remain free of rebirth. So the formulation is a little bit different than it has been before. It's more, well, you know, that military analogy is pretty clear. To remain free of rebirth is now gone. It sounds like you are a prisoner.
What's the next sentence or the next phrase?
So even if I don't wish rebirth, I have no choice anymore. So we're out of options.
Sorry, Charlie.
Out of options.
Game over.
End of the line.
Here's the story.
That's it, folks.
Now, but think about this for a minute. Think about it for a minute. This is the thing that caught my brain this week when I was looking at this darn thing. I thought, so this guy, for 40-some
days, quote.
Quote. You know, the cheerleaders are sitting there saying, hey.
You can do it.
You can do it, baby.
You can do it.
You can be liberated.
You can be free. You don't have to get bolted.
Oh, that's happening? Here's what you got to do. Right?
Let me show you how to get out of that.
Oh, my gosh. That is really horrible. Here's how you get out of that one. On and on and on. And now the principal comes in and says, can't do it, Charlie. You're done, baby. You are going to go towards rebirth. So the concept of liberation is unusual anyway, if you think about it. Because I know that we're not going to get into a lot of theory here, so I'm just going to assume some certain things and maybe a lot of things for some people. But so that the rebirth cycle means I got to take rebirth again, right? Okay. So in this context, in a certain way, it means, in this context, it means I've got more work to do.
Correct.
Now that makes sense, doesn't it? Are you ready for liberation?
Liberation.
Are you ready for liberation? Well, we don't quite know what that means. It could mean, we don't know what it means exactly. But we do know that this particular cycle that we're in, we are not ready for that. Okay? It's not going to happen again. We're in the process of rebirth.
No parole, no probation. You have continued time. That's what it is. Now you're going to have continued more time. You're going to have more existence. You're going to have more form. You're going to have reformation.
Now, here's the interesting thing about this particular phase of the cycle. So the Voyager now may know that that's the case. And then this whole storm at sea starts up.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a storm at sea. Just why don't you read us a couple of the passages, Pat?
Well, behind me are the ones I am afraid of.
No, but just before that one.
I am being helplessly pulled and pushed, drawn into rebirth of some kind.
Okay, of some kind. Note, underline, boldify, got it. Let's go.
Behind me are the ones I am afraid of, and in front of me, sadistic and degraded beings are pulling me along into rebirth.
Dang.
No options here.
So suspend your judgment for a moment.
Right.
Suspend your judgment in terms of what you think that might mean. Suspend your judgment in terms of, oh, I can visualize that guy going through that. You're not reading a story here. This is an account of a space. So can you imagine yourself in that space today, tomorrow? Did you go through that space today? If you didn't, you will tomorrow.
Several times.
Some people went through it several times today. So this chaos of I just think of a raft on the ocean.
Yes.
And suddenly this chaos is occurring, and there's rain and waves and push, pull, this tension, and you think that, well, if only I could go, well, not forward and not back, right?
Right.
How do you play that one? How have you played that one? Because you have.
And you find the notch of best fit.
Say it again.
You find the place of best fit because you're going to have to do something with it. I had to deal
today with my accountant,
and so I didn't want to really deal with that, so I was pushed and pulled into dealing with something I would rather not have thought about. So I said, well, since I have to do this, let's find the best fit for this situation so I can be done with it and think about class tonight.
So he stood in the in-between ground. Harry stood in this in-between ground, and in the email I sent out, I called that, once again, I've used this phrase, I call that dynamic surrender. That means a good sense of intelligence and observation. You say, ah, this is going on. It doesn't say, I am that. It says, this is going on. Right?
Exactly.
So if this is going on, you know that, wasn't there a phrase, some sort of rebirth?
Oh, it says drawn into rebirth of some kind.
So, rebirth of some kind. So, do you have, in the limited choices that you have, that we have today, do you have choice? The answer
yes.
is
yes.
Yes,
you do.
But you have to be pretty active, right, Harry?
Well, you're going to have to pick something. You don't have the choice to not pick one.
Correct.
But you do have a way to flavor it. You may have to drink your castor oil, but you can
That's
flavor
right.
it.
You may have to drink your castor oil.
You may have to flavor your castor oil. You have a choice to flavor the castor oil.
Yes,
you don't have
I would
to
say.
Take it.
There was a very, very bad movie from the 70s that I saw it because one of my great, great favorites, Harry Belafonte, was actually in the movie. And it was one of the post-apocalyptic things where
mm-hmm.
everybody had died and there was like four people left in the world. I don't remember the name of the movie, actually, at all. But I remember one scene. He walked into this space and there was a picture, a painting on the wall, and there was turbulent water and there was this man on a raft. And you could tell he was in survival mode, right? This guy in the raft in survival mode. In the distance in the painting was a tornado coming toward
mm-hmm.
him. This is in this
in
movie.
In the movie.
And I don't know the name of the painting or the movie at the moment, but I just thought, can it get worse? Uh-huh.
Yeah, the tornado is coming towards me. Well, there is one piece of this. We're in the first paragraph now. So there's one piece of this last sentence, which it's not really hopeful, but it's an indicator of how you could make a choice, take hold, similar to what Harry is talking about.
Go for it.
Confusion is all around me. Everyone is shouting directions at me, telling me what to do, which birth to take, what's best for me now, and making me unable to orient myself and choose wisely and carefully. So for me, the implication is if you observe your situation in even the smallest degree of detachment, and you make the distinction between you, yourself, and the confusion that is around you, you still have a modicum of potential choice because you have not completely identified yourself with the chaos.
And that's the point I wanted to make. It is the terminology here, I think, provides us with the answer to how to proceed, because that first phrase that you read it again.
Confusion is all around me.
Now notice that it doesn't say, I am confused.
Mm-mm.
It does not say, I am so confused.
Mm-mm.
Confusion is around me. So I'm driving here tonight. Now Grass Valley is such a small town that it probably doesn't show up on very many maps.
Not too many maps, no.
It would just go in the hip pocket of some of these cities that people live in. But it's a little teeny town, and it's rare that there's anything even approaching the concept of traffic.
Right. Yeah.
So one of the busier streets at 5 to 5:30 in the evening is Main Street near Mill in downtown Grass Valley, which is where I come. And tonight, somebody was attempting to park on Main Street, which means they held up the entire traffic pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, my immediate response was to heavily judge them. Okay. Yeah,
yes.
Just totally berated
parking,
the person.
Parking, making no room for anyone else to move until they completed their parking job.
Except then I noticed something. The guy in front of me was starting to look like a younger man in his young mid-20s. You could see he was getting visibly agitated, the way he was moving and, you know, like this. And then I realized confusion was all around me.
Yeah.
The cars were all stuck up there.
Yes.
People couldn't get through this way and that way. Confusion was all around me. At which point, I just stopped.
Surrendered.
I surrendered. This is how it is.
Yeah.
This is the space as it is this moment right now.
Right. Nothing to be done about it.
So I was in that space. Sometimes when I get in the space, I don't know what happens to you guys, but sometimes I get in that space frighteningly enough, and I think, what if this was it? What if this was
the end of it?
The end of it, and this was my, in a sense, my eternal Bardo space. What would happen?
Yeah.
What would it be like?
Yeah.
What would the eternality of this moment be? Go ahead, Harry.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, well, yours obviously is going to be with your accountant, so there.
Yeah.
Hey,
oh.
Pat and I have a very soft spot in our hearts for accountants. Okay?
Yeah. No, this is a wonderful bridge to exploring that lack of impartiality, the most recent one that you can recall, which in my case, I'm ashamed to say, was yelling at my mother as I was leaving, which, you know, there's nothing worse than yelling at your mother except to yell at her when you're leaving.
That's pretty bad.
You know? So, yeah, I sat with that for 3 days and go, oh, that'll be the last time that she sees me. Oh, that'll be the last time I see her. Oh, you know,
lay it on.
But if there is a way for you to take what is your most immediately egregious example to yourself of your lack of impartiality and stick it in this sentence. You get the impact, the potency of this, the extremeness of it. It's really bad news. And it says, making me unable to orient myself. That's the clue right there. If you cannot get your orientation, if you cannot maintain your stability, if you don't have a way to put yourself at a small bit of distancing is the geographic word. We're talking about something here a little bit less dramatic.
Talking about some sense of objectivity.
There you go.
So you aren't confused.
You aren't it.
Confusion is happening all around
me. That's right.
When I we had the shops downtown in Nevada City, and this is the first night that we had officially opened the truffle shop.
Oh boy.
So it was a couple of years ago. Maybe.
At 30 is what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I don't,
30 years ago.
Probably 30 years ago, and I think that Raven hadn't even been born then. But it was a truffle shop, and there was a big event in this New York hotel. There was a lot of people coming.
Yeah.
We had everything was set up properly in the truffle shop, but the truffles hadn't arrived yet. This was not Bill's truffles.
Right.
It was the truffles from Sacramento, starting with a G. I can't remember the name of them. Mm-hmm. Anyway, do you remember these? Yeah.
I wasn't here then.
You weren't there then.
No.
So anyway.
Before 1987.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was probably right after I'd gotten here.
Like 85.
No, 86. 86. Because I got here in 86.
Yeah.
So we're opening this thing up. I'm behind the counter. Joyce is there. And the truffles arrive. Okay? So it's in the evening. It's
yes.
Probably 6, 6:30. Traffic is there. There's
mm-hmm.
people. EJ comes in and starts hammering on me. Why were we late? Look at all the business we're losing.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, the bad planning, da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
I turned and, of course was reacting to this, and I turned and I noticed Joyce, who was just, slightly less adroit than I, and she's like a deer in the headlights, frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized confusion is all around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, turned to her and I said, just keep putting the truffles out.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So we knew what to do. You could actually do something then. It wasn't like I wasn't going to solve this EJ problem
right.
in front of me.
No.
But I could do something then. Right? There was something I was able to do, a tangible, an appropriate to the space thing that I could do right then. So I did it.
Mm-hmm.
So the key to this is, I love this chamber right here because this is like practice.
Yes.
If you can put yourself in a place where all these things are happening. Confusion is all around me. Keep reading. I'm not quite ready for that last paragraph.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to keep reading when you finish.
Yeah. Unable to orient myself, choose wisely, carefully, da-da-da-da-da-da. So if you've been there, we've all been there. We know what that's like. You go to the store and something's happening. There's a conflict of some sort, a confusion. Our normal response is we tense up.
Yes, exactly.
The muscles tense
up. Freeze up, kind of like what we had earlier this evening.
And we're going to fight the damn thing. Or you can go into dynamic surrender and just recognize for the sense of objectivity, confusion is around me. That's a good thing.
Recognition of the state in which you exist is the first step to being able to deal with it. You have to know where you are. You have to be able to recognize what's going on. Otherwise, you can't see to make any moves.
So in the worst of these states where, like, I'm being pulled from the back and pushed from the front, and the bad guys are behind me, and worse guys are in front of me. Confusion is all around me. What can I do? Something. Okay? Something. You don't know what it is, but I guarantee you I have a lot of trust. Who was I talking to? I know. It doesn't matter who, but I was talking to somebody, and I said, I trust your essential self will make the right decision. I don't know what the decision will be, but I trust that that's what's going to come forward. Okay? Isn't that cool?
this is what this final paragraph, this is only a two-paragraph chamber, but the final paragraph speaks to this. I'll look, so here's an activity, I'll look for some sort of refuge from all this din and shouting. I see some buildings or rocks or perhaps a cave. Maybe all there is to hide in is a clump of bushes. After I have hidden there, I'll realize that I'm in a womb and that my perceptions deceived me. I'm going to stop there for just a second because the information that's being delivered in this chamber, remember, this is instructions that are being heard in a chamber that exists as the experience of the voyager is stating it. So the statement is, the activity of the voyager is, I'll look for refuge. Because that's the habit. There's din and confusion and chaos and horrible things, so what do? Hide. You know?
That's right.
Get out of there. And what occurs is now, I think, if you want to have information and it comes after the fact, you're actually going to get something that's closer from information to education, which is, after I've hidden there, I'll realize that I'm in a womb. And then my perceptions deceived me. So I'm just indicating here that there's more than just the descriptiveness of the chamber. There's the how does it work on an essential self level.
But keep reading.
What I see in the last stage of the labyrinth voyage is not. Now, I am afraid to come back out, even though I still have a chance to escape from it, because they are waiting out there to get me, which is even more information. And because when you see, that's a form of knowing. You see that what you see is not what you get. That's, you know, what's a bigger statement about what is illusion and all phenomena is illusion than that? What I see in the last stage of the labyrinth voyage is not what I get. So it looked like a clump of bushes, but it's a womb. And my perceptions told me this, but they were wrong. And so what is it that you're going to trust now? How are you going to be able to make decisions? What are you going to rely on? Now I am afraid. Well, that's the total, honest, tactile message of all of the human responses, which is first there's confusion, then you go hide, and now you're afraid.
Right.
That's one, two, and three. That's a human organism, perceptions, that's the common cosmic presence.
That's the common mechanism.
That's right. It's in
default. The common default mechanism.
That's the default.
You see something, you get afraid, you hide.
Yeah.
And I want to propose the beginning of a conversation as to an antidote to that.
Yes, go ahead.
All right.
The beginning.
Well, and that's because this particular concept that I'm about to bring out, which is no big thing, but is something that could be a very lengthy conversation at some point. And that is that part of the reason that you hide and part of the reason that you become afraid and therefore hide, because you don't have any other tools at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So what's another tool that you can develop when those elements are about you?
Mm-hmm.
Confusion is all about me.
Mm-hmm.
The bad guys are behind me. The big, bad, badder guys are in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's pull, push. What is it? What is a antidote to that? And it's an almost absolute antidote. The first line of the Bodhisattva vow is the passions of delusion are inexhaustible.
Mm-hmm.
I vow to extinguish them all at once. When I first read that, I thought, oh my God, that doesn't make sense. First of all, how can I go through each emotion and clear it? You know, my
mm-hmm.
God, that'd take me decades.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing says all at once.
Mm-hmm.
What is the answer to that riddle? And that answer is this chamber. That's the opportunity. Because once you start to have some sense of what a solution might be, you're going to want to practice it and seek those places called confusion is all around me. Because you're going to practice that skill set. And when you develop that skill set, it is with you and available forever. And I mean forever, ever. So the element that we're talking about is what I call the crystal clear insight of objectivity. And all I mean by that, I don't mean a mental mentation about that, but it's this phrase, confusion is all around me. I am not the confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at Chapter 7 of Practical Work on Self. I am not that. Okay, that's what we're talking about here.
Or if you remember Parker Dixon's The Woman's Song, I am not this place.
Mm-hmm.
I am not this mind. I am not this body. I am not this mind.
So you have the opportunity because of this instruction to develop a skill set where your natural response is other than, I see this, I become afraid, and I hide.
Mm-hmm.
That your natural response is something that you slip into a sense of objectivity. And it's a crystal, it's crystalline in its tonality. There's a beauty to it. It's not flat.
There's a lot of training that women and their partner, man or woman, go through when they're going to do a childbirth, a natural childbirth, especially natural childbirth at home, which the Institute used that training and offered that training. In fact, we had a childbirth clinic for a number of years in Los Angeles. And part of that training has to do with retraining the response to, quote, fear, pain, sensation. And one of the techniques of doing that, of course, is using the breath. And that gets practiced in conjunction with a simulation of pain.
That's right.
And I'm just thinking about this thing you're talking about, that clearness. That is actually transferable. That in a space, in a chamber, is transferable. And we had that experience down in Sacramento with our buddy. But when my son was born, I was doing the appropriate breathing for the stage, and as he was born, his breathing was emulating mine exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. And the midwife and the doctor go, oh, you're breathing together.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what I'm saying. It is a trained response to provide you with a transition to an alternative to the normal reaction, the normal default. So you stick that trained alternative in place of the default.
We know what the default is. So what I'm suggesting here is to find, you know, I use the term a lot, ways and means, and I get that originally from a guy named Richard Rose many decades ago, ways and means of overcoming these habitual patterns of mechanicality, really. So you're going to want to put yourself in a position where these things, so you can practice that. Spinoza at one point said in his letter to his friend, when he was in Amsterdam, he says, every once in a while I find another infirmity, what he called these confusions, and I have joy about that because I can see another place to work.
Mm.
How about that one?
Well,
that was in the 17th century, one of the greatest centuries of Western man. But anyway, the point is that, so find these ways and means to put yourself in a position where this is about you, and practice. The human tendency is to find comfort. I do. I mostly want comfort. I want things where I'm not in conflict. I don't pick up the phone and call something I know is going to be a thing of conflict. I don't do a job where it's I keep avoiding. Maybe it'll go away. But it doesn't. So can you find, when you find those things in your circumstance during the day, embrace them. Embrace them and see, how does this thing operate?
Mm-hmm.
What does it do?
It's an opportunity for discovery of a new ways and means.
If you can see this concept, just write this down. Confusion is all around me. And you immediately accept that. You accept that and says, oh, I'm confused. Maybe not.
You're not really there.
You're really not confused. Maybe there's confusion all around you. And the technique we're looking at is to unbind ourselves from that.
Mm-hmm.
You unbind yourself from that by this beautiful crystalline sense of objectivity. And you just know, you see it going on around you. And you don't know what form it's going to take. It's going to take some form. It's going to be a small something tomorrow and a giant thing on Friday and a small, we don't know. But it'll be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
A lot of comments. Here they come. Pick up the phone. Here it is.
Simon Templar says, I always thought that the state of confusion is always in the observer, not in the situation outside. I always think I am confused, although outside may look somewhat chaotic. Just a thought.
Yeah, well, that's the default thought of human existence. Oh, I'm confused.
Yeah.
You don't know that.
And Gopal says, well, you may be able to see that you are confused, so somebody is still watching.
So you have that's a foothold, like in HDM, you know, establishing a beachhead.
Yes.
So you have a foothold. Even if you're saying, I'm confused, really say it. Really say it. Go ahead.
And then Raven says, I have several moments of being surrounded by confusion when I'm guiding and giving instructions to the children I work with. I often have to say freeze with a strong voice and guide them out of the situation.
I love that.
An individual is teaching elementary school children.
That is so clear.
Who are bubbling over with energy.
Yeah.
They're just jumping up and down. And so think about her technique for a second, this teacher provides.
Mm-hmm.
This class group is going apeshit crazy.
Yeah.
They're nuts. And they're, the chaos is incredible. So normally, a couple of things happen is the teacher would just kind of let it go, hope it changes.
Yeah, hope it'll wear itself out.
or they would dominate them in some way, saying, you're going to go to the principal, or Johnny, you're the cause of all of this.
Yeah, let's administrate this.
You little creep, you know. Or, but she said, freeze. I don't know if she actually does that, but she says, freeze. If she does that, there is a microsecond of self-observation that occurs in those children. And suddenly they go, oh, what was happening? So there's a one penny deposit in each of those little kids' essence banks that day. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, Paul says, nice. Still point is there somewhere? We're working with this with the Dreamers group. Simon Templar says, again, outside it's always what it is. We, in the other side, experience it with clarity or confusion.
Okay.
And Ati Matter says, learning to be a student of Confucianism.
Nice.
Well,
yeah, I mean, that can be part of your job, too. The part of your job is that in the midst of confusion, are you the operative that can walk through that? It's like, you know, you think of these technicians. Think about this for a minute. Some guy that his job is to repair a nuclear reactor.
Yes.
And he has to put the suit on and walk in there.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
It's like death, right?
Right.
So are you that person? Can you walk into that space and not be affected by its radiation? People are saying they don't think so. Sometimes you can be. Sometimes on a remarkable level you can be. Go ahead.
So Simon says, then the default is to reach inside the state of total clarity regarding the events outside as an illusion?
Well, not an illusion, necessarily. You might really, there really might be confusion. Of course, ultimately it's a form of an illusion, but it's finding the space in yourself that we're talking about here called objectivity. Standing on the cliff, the solid cliff of objectivity, and looking out across the ocean.
And Atimata, thanks you for the description of the Spinoza passage. And Gopal says, the Tai Chi symbol is the rotation and opposition of opposing forces, but there is a center.
That's right.
And when the whole circle, it is traced by how the center moves, not by how it is rotating.
Nice. Very nice.
Okay, and that's the last comment. And then I just wonder, it seems that the one feature of this chamber is the idea of being chased, and that there's somebody behind me chasing me.
That's one element.
Is this a situation where if one could face what they feel is chasing them, that would dispel the confusion?
I think what happens in a case like that, Dan, is that we empower the thing that is chasing us by buying into the illusion that in fact is, oh, this is really scary. And you're, oh, yeah, it really is. And then you call your girlfriend up and you say, oh, this is happening. They go, oh, yeah, that is really scary. Rather than going, just noting in fact what it is. In the beginning of the short treatise on human understanding, you know, Spinoza says, you know, he says that we really have the only thing that affects the mind in these outer experiences is fear. And there's nothing of substance in fear. It's just a notation. So if we feed that devil, it will grow. We're giving it life. Before, this was years and years and years ago when I started doing this, I think before I came, but I can't imagine that. Certainly. I kind of remembered I wanted to do a video game where the Voyager in the game, the little guy,
mm-hmm.
got less and less stuff
mm-hmm.
until they were at the very end where they had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, they could defeat everything because there was no effect on them.
I think it's not necessarily important or even particularly helpful to try to discern whether what you read in this chamber is something that is descriptive of an actual or a illusory experience. You're talking about how can you retrain your response.
There you go.
What you're using the chamber for is to place yourself in that experiential orientation and what is your default response. Not whether it's generated by how you are observing it or not. It's whether you have the objectivity to make that alternative move. So in a certain way, when we look to define what is the cause or motive of the response of it's fearful behind and it's fearful in front or worse in front or it's confusion around me, that the part of it that we want to actually put ourselves into to practice with is, oh, I'm unable to orient myself and choose wisely and carefully. Take that as the given, and now what? what can you do about it now from that place? That's where your starting point is. So however you are, that's where you are. Now what? This is the interesting thing about reading the text in this manner, which is you're reading it as a narrative. You're reading it as a description. You're reading it as a character's response to circumstances. You're reading it as the teacher inside of your own essential self describing. What move do you make as the player with your character, like you're describing? So,
and one of the things I want to point out, and this is an equally important point to the antidote, is you do have the tool.
There you go.
You, in fact, have the tool. You don't believe it, but if you work and you work with it and you practice it, you roll it out into life and you notice yourself in these circumstances, it starts to prove to yourself the great confidence that I have in your essential self. You will find and the same confidence that you have in that essential self. You will find it. Like the methods.
I want to know how they like the methods.
So I know we're over time.
Yeah. Well, we have
late night.
We have about an extra 12 minutes. We have 3 more minutes here.
Late bird comes in. Still up.
That was the thing over there.
Three more. Why is this thing? Why are you doing that?
Well, he's got one more.
Auto repair, cleaning products.
Yes.
So we're gonna end it there. So good. And we'll take it up again next Wednesday. I'm not quite sure the next 2 weeks. I'm not sure it's going to be 1, 2, or 3 chambers
mm-hmm.
per class.
That's right.
They're kind of jumbly toward the end here.
Well, they leap.
they leap
ahead, you know.
They leap ahead, and we might leap ahead too. And once again, the reminder is that we'll be working with the American Book of the Dead
guidebook.
And then Shelly Boyce says, if I practice, my habits shall carry me through.
Well, and then she's tied that back into, what is it, the 37th chamber? No, and this is my habit of coming through. That's precisely what we're talking about. That's actually and we know that will work. I want you to have that knowledge.